accession number 18821, Real 2.
Reg Hulbert, Real 2. Oh, I was going to ask you about what contact you had and what you made of the other occupation forces like the Russians, Americans and French.
Yeah, well, obviously, the interesting thing was that people weren't normally allowed into the Russian sector of Berlin as by normal transport, but they did do guided tours into the Russian sector, which I and obviously some of my mates went on. But when we go into the Russian sector, it was of Berlin, Russian sector of Berlin, it was apparent that when the Russians beat the Germans, they intended not to let them to forget it, because there was great monuments of Russian soldiers smashing the swastika in half, and everything was built, and you couldn't help but notice that Russia intended to make it known that they were the victors. Whereas in the British and American sector, there was nothing like that at all.
What impression did the troops, like the Russians, Americans and French troops, make on you?
The troops themselves, you mean?
Yes.
We didn't come in contact with them too much. They used to have exercises with them. But I don't think, because we're in our own sector, we didn't really come in contact with the other forces as such. We might if we were on a joint, as I say, a joint exercise, but not to that extent.
What were your living conditions like as soldiers?
First class barracks, absolutely, because they were purposely built barracks that the German army were in originally, and they were absolutely first class. And of course the bullshit on those, of course, cleaning the floors and scrubbing the floors and that sort of thing, rather spoilt the stay, because you clean a floor and the sergeant major come along and decide it was dirty, either by dirtying it himself or just saying it wasn't clean enough, you know. But then we were living in a bullshit time, and there was nothing else for them to keep the forces occupied. That's my opinion.
So you said you came back to England after that?
Yeah, we come back. I was still in HQ, as I say. We all come back to Perham Down in Salisbury Plain, which is more or less for embarkation leave. And we went on three weeks embarkation leave. But that particular night we got to Perham Down, some of our draft were called out, and they went on leave immediately that night, because it turned out they were younger than the rest of us by a few months, and you weren't allowed to go to the Far East, or you weren't allowed to go to Korea unless you were a certain age. I think it was 18 and a half, I can't remember exactly. And so my pal, I told you I met on the train, he was younger than me by about a month or so, and he was sent on leave earlier, and on to another draft. What he done, and what the rest of us done, we went home. We had 3 weeks leave at home, and we went back to Perham Down for a fortnight, and which we got weekend leave on each occasion, and then. Then the whole battalion, apart from the draft that had gone on beforehand of the younger people, I don't know where they went to, quite honestly, but they followed us up. You'll see us, they followed us up later in the year. But we then boarded the Empire Fowey at Southampton. And because our draft was one of the youngest ones to hit the battalion, we weren't going to Korea. The battalion was going to go to Korea, and we were going to go on to Japan. And I had a nice, very nice, I think about 3 weeks, cruising through the Suez Canal, round to Ceylon, as it was then, Singapore. And I had a nice time because the first evening we were on the boat, there was an announcement on the tannoy to say anybody who was a plumber, printer, cook, also anybody in civil life was in these trades, would they please report to the RSM? So I went along as a printer, a compositor, and the ship's printer, for those who are a troop ship, had a printing office, a printing shop on it, and they wanted a compositor, set type, to work in the print shop. And there's about, I believe there was about 6 or 8 printers there, and they all had different trades in the printing industry. But it was only myself and another chap who was a compositor, so we spun up for it, and I won it. So therefore, I spent my time in the print shop. What I used to have to do, I used to have to set the menus up for printing for the officer's mess, because they had a different menu for each meal, breakfast, dinner, lunch and dinner. So, the actual chap who ran the print, he was obviously in the Merchant Navy, and he done the printing, the working the machine, and I set the type up. So it was rather nice, really. But I was free to go on shore leave every time we docked at the various ports on the way. And then when we got to Busan, the battalion got off, and I always remember there was a great American band on the seashore, on the shore, and the tune they were playing, which was a very popular tune at the time, was if I'd known you'd come in, I'd have baked you a cake. Typical American style.
What impression did Busan make on you?
Well, we didn't get off the boat. The battalion just got off. Our draft, as I said to you before, didn't get off at Korea. We then went on to Japan for advanced battle training. And when we went on to, when we got to, we docked at a place called Kuri in Japan. And we were taken to a transient camp. And after a few days, we had a route march, 26 miles, up into the hills, in a place called Haramira. And having been on a boat for 3 weeks, I don't think we were the fittest of people. But anyhow, we had this route march up, and I always remember it's pouring with rain. 26 miles it was, as I say. And when we got up to this battle school, we were all pouring with rain, soaking wet. And I always remember, it looked an awful place, a big Black Watch RSM came along, because there were mixed regiments in this high school. He came along and he put his pacing stick between us, and he sort of got about 20 of us and said, "You lot in that out there where we stay for some time," in fact all afternoon, soaking wet, and we didn't know really what was happening at all. In the end, a couple of us decided to have a wander around. We'd been there 3 or 4 hours. So we walked up this camp, and we happened to see a Royal Irish Fusilier officer. Obviously never seen him before. A young lieutenant. Told him who we were, what we were, so he said, "I'll come and see, I'll find out." So anyhow, eventually what had happened, we had been singled out to do a fatigue. Instead of doing the battle course, we had to do a fatigue for a month, which meant we had to keep the camp in in good repair. And one of our, which at the time we were all really depressed and, you know, fed up about it. But once we got into it, it wasn't a bad thing after all. There was about four through this. This was sort of, it was out in the up in the mountains, this battle school. There was about four restrooms where you could, the blokes could go and relax and read, and each one of those had to be manned by one of us. So some of us got jobs of doing that, others got other jobs. One of the main jobs, we had to, every morning and evening, we used to go down to the local railway station and unload rail trucks full of cinders into army lorries and bring them back and keep them on the, put them on the roads, on the paths, because it's very wet, very muddy. So we used, that's one of our jobs, and we used to do several things like that. And although we were fed up at the first of all, we us little group formed a good companionship. We heard the battle, then the battle school started, like the rest of the drafters started their battle training. So we got to hear all about that, because most of the battle training was done with live ammunition. And then we began to think, this is not a bad sort of place to be, probably better in Korea. So we started thinking about putting in for courses after the, we'd done our, our idea was to do the battle course, and then, and then we thought, if we put in some courses, we're, and we know what, when we're, you know, so it was a big advantage. So we'd done our months battle training. By that time, the people I told you went home earlier from Salisbury Plain, they'd gone to Hong Kong, and by that time they'd called up with us, because they were that much younger, you see, so they couldn't get into the career zone until they were that much older. And by that time, they joined us again. So they'd done their battle course with us. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the battle course was pretty grueling. 6 days a week. Used to have Sundays off, but Sunday morning used to go for a run up the mountain. So, and I think really and truly, and that's the thing I appreciate with the Army more than anything else, is the fact that I got the peak fitness, and I feel today like a lot of people probably leave school and live their life without ever becoming to the peak fitness, that's physically, and I think in doing so you do mentally as well. Now, I never thought I'd hear myself saying this at the time, but I honestly believe that. I would never have become as fit as I did had I not done this training. And then,
kind of things were they training you to do in the battle course?
Patrolling and mortar firing, general battle, camouflaging, moving. I would say one of the exercises was they used to put a Bren gun on one hill and line you up the other hill, make you run down the hill, down this path, firing Bren gun bullets behind the last one, so you didn't stop. And there were one or two accidents, I'm afraid, not in our battle course, but in the course before us. You do the box formation, what they call box formation, where you're going through and you fire to the left, you turn, will turn to the left, fire, will turn to the right, fire. And unfortunately, on one of these exercises, can't remember what happened, but one of the corporals was in the line of fire and got killed. We heard about that because that happened while we were still doing the fatigues. And we also picked up all sorts of other things which helped us. So I remember when we were doing our battle course, we were with Aussies for certain exercises. Australian troops joined us because they were at the battle school as well. And we went on a route march. We used to have three or four route marches a week. We went on this route march, very wet, very muddy. When we came back, they sat us down for a two-inch mortar demonstration. And during this, and I knew what was going to happen because I'd been told, but during this demonstration, they explained to us that they'd tell you all about the range and that, and they said sometimes you get a drop short. And when you hear the drop short, you take cover because it's come out of the firing, out of the mortar and drop short. And this chap's firing off, and we're all sitting around there, as I say. And this chap's firing off mortars left, right and centre. And all of a sudden he shouts out, drop short. Now I was determined, and so were some of our mates, not to move because we knew what it was all about. But everybody gets up and runs as fast as they can. Then we hit the deck, all in the mud, and I'm just laughing. I just can't stop laughing. And this Aussie next to me looks up and he said, what the bloody hell are you laughing at? We might have got killed. But I'd already been told the demonstrator had done it as a joke, if you like. So they're the things you sort of remember, I suppose. And then, after we finished our battle course, I'd already put in, so some of my mates, for different courses. And I put in for a signalist course. I was already in the signal platoon and HQ. I wasn't a qualified signaler at that time because I hadn't done the courses. But I put in the first course there. So we spent another 6 weeks at the battle school doing a signal course, which was radio, I can't remember, there were 30, no, I can't remember the radio, or something, the radio, large radios we used to have, and the voice procedure, and as I say, we spent 6 weeks doing that, which was great, I must do it. And then, that was a time when I had an accident, because one of the exercises, what we had to do, we had to, they split us up into twos, and they positioned us on different points around mountains that were around a big lake, and the control tent was in the bottom. The idea was that we were represented as companies, as you would if you were in battle, I suppose. And we had to lay landlines, telephone landlines, from the control tent to where we were. And also we had radio contact. And then during the night, they would come round with thunder flashes, cut the landline, and one of you would remain where you were, and the other one would go out to repair the line. And so what you had to do then, you had to follow your line, literally follow the telephone line down the mountain until you found the break. Then you had to find the other end to make the join and restore communication. At the same time, your man you left behind was in radio contact with the control tent. And this, I suppose they must have had about a dozen of these groups around. And this night, it was my turn. You took it one night, you were radio operator, the next night you were steady line man. And I remember taking this, following this line down. And I got almost to the bottom, found the break. But then I got attacked by thunder flashes, because they were all the officers and the instructors were around. And they started throwing thunder flashes. So I came back into the tent, into the control tent, sent a message over the wireless to me, Oppo, where I was going, where I was. And when it all died down, I went out again. Now, as I come out of this brilliantly lit tent into the darkness, I remember seeing a pile of logs there the day before, right on the edge of the lake. And I remember saying to myself, stand still. You know what it's like when you come out of a lighting. I remember myself standing. The next time I knew I was falling, and I went head first down the cliff into the lake, and smashed me, bridging my nose on the bottom. And I had a telephone on my back, and I heard this ringing in my head. And you know, you see stars, you actually saw stars. But anyhow, of course, I shouted. Of course, no one had come because they thought someone was being attacked by thunder flashes. But eventually, they came, and I was helped up the bank. And I, as I say, I smashed the bridge of my nose, which I went into. I had stitches in it, you know, and. I can't remember what happened after that, but I know I was, my face was cut up a bit for quite a while. But, and then soon after that, we finished the course, passed, got our signal flashes for our arm, because if you were a regimental signaller, you wore two cross flags on your arm. And because my nose hadn't healed up properly, I was taken off draft. The rest of them went off to Korea. 3 hours later, they were all back because they couldn't go to Korea because they had, some of them had had their right inoculations. So by the time they were going, I was then had my stitches out and I was back on draft. So off we went to Korea, and that was something. That was quite an experience in this. Oh, this Japanese, or I suppose it was Japanese or Korean tug that took us across overnight. It was a real tug, you know. And then we joined the battalion. I forget where they were, up by the what they used to call the MDZ, demilitarised zone, 38 parallel, I believe it was called. And that's what we were patrolling, and we were in tented accommodation there. Extremely cold. Extremely cold. The tents were heated by petrol or burners. Butane, or no, I suppose it was paraffin. I think. We were there just before Christmas, so that would be December 54. But by that, and as I say, it was extremely cold. But the food was very good because. The Americans used to have real their rations, and I think our cookhouses used to do a bit of exchanging with them, you know, and the food was extremely good, although it was very cold, and consequently by the time you got it in your mess tin at the cookhouse, time you got the dining table, it could be frozen almost. Bitterly cold. And we had all the proper American gear, you know, combat jackets and all that, how those sort of Gloucesters and other regiments in the war managed in BD, in their normal BDs, and in that cold, I think the weather must have been a bigger enemy to them than the actual fighting. I remember laying in bed one night, or in my sleeping bag, with my head and arms just out, laying on my stomach, writing a letter home. I was using a fountain pen at the time. I don't think biros were about in those days. And all of a sudden the pen packed up, and the reason it packed up was because the ink had frozen on the tip of the pen. Christmas, I told you it was Christmas. I put a couple of bottles of beer under my bed, went for them the next morning, they're gone. They're frozen, broken. Because you didn't have the heating on all night, you only had it on during the daytime hours, you know, or evening. And it was that cold, it was really cold. And and again, you see, the attitude had changed from, we were back with a battalion, but of course it wasn't bullshit, it was combat. That's how the attitude, you wouldn't think you were the same regiment if you know, because you were in a, although there wasn't a war on, you were in a fighting, a war zone as such.
Did you prefer?
Oh, which did I prefer? That's a question. I didn't want to be in a war zone, but I didn't want to do the bullshit either. So, you know, I'm afraid that the answer to that is probably, in my opinion, is 6 to 1, half a dozen another, you know. Neither of them were suitable for me, if you know what I mean. That's why I would become a regular. Well, they are, you know.
Were there any incidents with the enemy at all?
Well, most of it, as I say, we were occupational. So, therefore, we were patrolling mainly. And as I said to you, there was the 38th parallel was a DMZ line, where there was three tapes going right across the Korea, right across the country, three white tapes. We were one side, they were the other side, with lookouts. And that was no man's land in there. We used to patrol no man's land. And I was a signaller, as I say, so we would go up to this checkpoint on the DMZ, and they would patrol it. And in the evening, when we had a sergeant, that everybody thought he was a mad. He was a regular soldier, everybody thought he was mad. But he used to patrol, and he used to keep coming in every after. He said, "There's someone out there, I know there is." He kept all on about it. And eventually he did bring one of the Koreans, a couple of Koreans in, who was trying to escape to the south, I presume, you know. But we weren't in any battles with them because, as I said, the war was over.
Were they civilians or soldiers?
Soldiers, I think, yeah. Deserters, probably. But from the north.
What condition were they in?
Oh, they were okay, like most Koreans look at that time. Most Koreans look half-starved to me anyhow, you know. Talking about conditions out there, I mean, so I think it's quite a ritual once a week to have a shower, because there were field showers, of course, you know. And it was quite a ritual to have a shower. We used to shower once a week on a regular basis. But thinking about it, it was a lorry trip. Lorry ride to the shower.
Were there any vermin or rats or anything like that there?
No, I think it was too cold, quite honestly. It might have been in the summer, because again, I think it gets extreme temperature in the summer, you know. But it was too cold, I think.
When you went out on patrol, what orders were you given?
Orders were we given? Well, I think I can't remember exactly the procedure, but the procedure was always to halt, and I can't remember the. We had to halt the people, question them, see who they were. It wasn't a question of firing ask questions afterwards. There's nothing like that, you know. It was a question of finding out who people were, you know.
And did you come across people as you went out?
No, I didn't. No, because I didn't go out on patrol much. Being a signaller, I was in the base most of the time, contact with HQ and sending messages.
So you had to do some patrols?
Some patrols, yeah, yeah.
Were they done at night or during the day?
Both.
And did you do night patrols or day patrol?
Both, from time to time.
How long would a patrol last for?
2 or 3 hours. 2 or 3 hours, depending what the idea was, you know.
What contact at that time did you have, if any, with any Korean civilians?
None, because we were out in the